We're going over in this series right now, core strength, and we're learning how to build our core. Just like in physical fitness, your core is that which enables you to be functional physically. And we're talking about spiritually, how it is that you and I become functional spiritually. How do we gain spiritual strength in order to do the things we want to do, in order to see the things we want to see, in order to experience the things we want to experience, in order to endure through the things we want to endure. And God gave us an interesting little snippet of reality this last Sunday at 1 o'clock when our power went out, didn't he? What an interesting, power goes out, and all of a sudden, I'm getting to know my neighbors for the first time. All of a sudden, I can't do everything in and of my own household. I got to band together with other people. Maybe it's just that I don't have anything better to do. I can't watch my television, so I actually get to talk to people in my neighborhood for a change. All of a sudden, I learned that some people have things that I don't have. Some people have refrigerators that we don't have we can store space in. Some people have warm showers that we don't have in order to go and take. And we all learned over the last several days that if you try to live on your own, especially in a power outage, you will not last. You will not. Some of us, the closest thing we get to community was just going to Starbucks. I went to Starbucks the day after the storm, 6 deep outside of the door waiting to get coffee. 6 deep. It wasn't just because the power was out. And we couldn't put on our own coffee makers at home, but it was because for many of us, that's the only place where we can have community. And we're really never sharing with anybody, but we're just around people. For many of us, that's the closest we come to community. I just got my power on this morning at like 8 o'clock. Crazy. Who got their power on today or still has not had their power on? I'm just curious. I think Duke Energy is sandbagging their numbers. That's what I think they're doing. I think they're sandbagging their numbers to keep us from whining about it. Here's the weird thing. Weird thing is I can't believe that I'm going to sit here today and tell you that you ought to build intentional relationships with people. I can't believe that I'm going to sit here and tell you that unless you have a community in your life, that your life is not going to go anywhere. I really can't believe that I'm going to tell you to get hooked up with other people in relationship or else you're not going to spiritually go anywhere. I can't believe I'm going to tell you that because my life is a history of all the reasons why not to have relationships with people. I mean, I'd love to tell you that there's 4 things you can do, and if you do these things, everything's going to be happy and joy, 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 and you're just going to be breathing in rosebuds every day, and you're going to be prancing through the woods and just having fun. I'd love to tell you I don't have any problem. I can't tell you that. I look at community, some of my early friendships when I was a little kid. We used to trade baseball cards together, do everything together, and then when my best friend stole my entire team of the Pittsburgh Pirates, just stole them. I remember feeling violated, and he still won't fess up to it today. Matt Chesnikowski, you won't fess up to it if you're listening to this online. But I remember this feeling violated. I thought, oh, I'll never have another friend again. I can't believe that I still think that I need to have friends. I can't believe how friends pulled me out of a time when Libby and I lost everything that we owned in a fire. We had no renter's insurance. And as we got pulled out financially, we felt the stinging criticism of people who are jealous for how people were generous to us. We had lifelong friends or longtime friends that were angry with us and said, well, why should you get something nice from somebody else? You made your own bed by not having insurance. Shouldn't you not have to lie in it? And some people that were very close to us just being jealous of us and not liking any of the good things that came around us. I can't believe I still believe in community after starting Crossroads with a number of people who I was in core community with only came along and just ripped my heart out and said, no, you know, that vision of what Crossroads is supposed to be is the wrong vision. We're leaving. And it's going, oh, I can't, are you sure? And having my heart ripped out when that happened. I can't believe I'm going to talk about community when I've been on vacations with people I thought were my closest friends, only to find at the table being totally yelled at and screamed at myself across the table, being called 4-letter words because someone didn't like the way I was conducting my life and the things that I had been saying to them. You want to talk about lonely? Be on the other side of the country with people who now have told you they hate your guts. I can't believe I still believe in community. I can't believe I'm going to sit here and talk to you about community after I've had people who I've walked through the most difficult of life circumstances through, re-put their lives together as a pastor, as a friend, and then later on have them tell lies about me and threaten legal lawsuits against me with things I've never done. I can't believe I'm going to sit here and tell you that you and I need to have core relationships. And yet I am. And yet I am. Because life cannot be lived alone. The spiritual life cannot be lived alone. We all see that physically life can't be lived alone, because unless a man and a woman come together physically, none of us are here. And also spiritually, life can't be lived alone and can't be grown alone, because the greatest person who ever lived, who actually was God and a human being, both together at the same time, if that's possible, is Jesus. And we see him having these characteristics that so many people who are other spiritual gurus don't have. I get really weary when people keep trying to put Jesus in the same camp as other enlightened spiritual, quote-unquote enlightened spiritual gurus, because there's things about his life that have nothing to do with anybody else's life, let alone the fact that he physically resurrected from the dead. That's pretty amazing. But he conducted his life entirely different. I took a look at other people who are spiritual heroes, whether they be Buddha or whether they be Joseph Smith, and they have this sort of John Wayne spirituality where they don't need anyone else. You never see them like sharing their life or weeping or burying themselves. They're just kind of their own person. Here you have Jesus. He comes down, born into a family, and you see him actually gather 12 friends around him, and he does community with these 12 friends, and you actually see him coming towards the end of his life, being nervous, sweating blood, praying, not wanting to actually die, and he's wanting his friends to be around him. He lives his life in community. He's in community, beginning of all time, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, heavy, heavy concepts. I can't defend or describe all of these heavy concepts right here. I'm just trying to help us see that there is a thread of community that goes through the entire Bible, as we talked about last night, goes through the entire life of Jesus. And if it doesn't go through your life, you will die. You will. You will die. Maybe physically, definitely spiritually, you will die. It does not work alone. One of my understandings of Jesus comes from the book of John, chapter 1:14, when it says how Jesus comes. And here's what it says in John, chapter 1, verse 14. The Word, speaking of Jesus, became flesh and made his dwelling amongst us. He came and had community amongst us. He lives here with us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. So Jesus comes from the Father in community. He comes and makes his dwelling here on earth. He has community with us. And he comes full of what? Not full of himself. Full of himself. Well, he was full of himself. But it gives the two primary characteristics of Jesus that sums up his entire life. Full of grace and truth. This is a thing in my life I've been trying to live more and more by, and trying to have this in the front of my heart and just be a person full of grace and full of truth, to the point where a few years ago I decided to permanently ink myself as a sign that I want to be a person full of grace, full of truth. I got a tattoo right here on my shoulder, and I might never seen it before. Here's my picture of my tattoo on my shoulder right there. That actually is my tattoo. That's not my nipples, though. And it's also not my forearm, but that actually is my tattoo for grace and truth of Jesus, fully seen in the crown of thorns and the crown. I don't want to go into a big thing there. But here's the thing. If Jesus comes full of grace and truth, how is it today that I get grace and truth? How do I get grace and truth today? I believe that I get grace and truth because I can read the Bible, as we talked about last week. And I read the Bible, I get truth. Right here, I get truth when I read the Bible. It tells me things that are unalterable. I also, when I read the Bible, I learn that God is a graceful God. He's a merciful God. He's a forgiving God. I get, in a sense, an awareness of God's grace. But I'll tell you, the most significant way that I get truth and I get grace, the most tangible way that I get truth and I get grace, the most tactile way that I get truth and I get grace, the most consistent way that I get truth and I get grace is through other people. I get grace and I get truth through other people. That's the primary delivery system. Now, if you take a look at in the New Testament portion of the Bible, all the one another scriptures or things that Jesus did and we should do, you see how great elements all of us would like to have in our life comes through community, comes through other people. Here's a little sampling of these right here. I got about four or five of them here. A new command I give you, love one another. How do I get love? When somebody gives it to me. I've loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know you're my disciples if you love one another. How will somebody know? if you really are a follower of Jesus, if you want to be, if you love other people and if other people are loving you, if you're in community. Accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you, in order to bring praise to God. How do I feel acceptance? I feel it because somebody else accepts me. And why would they accept me? Because God, Jesus, has accepted them. It comes in the context of community. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving one another, just as Christ, God, forgave you. As Jesus has forgiven me, as he's given me grace, I need to offer forgiveness to others. I need to receive forgiveness. How do I know what forgiveness feels like? Somebody else gives me forgiveness. Somebody else tells me I don't have to repay a financial debt. Somebody else tells me I don't have to work off one of my moral failings, that they've actually forgiven me. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. And your relationships with one another have the same attitude of mind that Christ Jesus had. Jesus had the attitude in his mind of looking out for other people's interests. That's why he died on the cross. That's why he was a blessing to people. So how do I have my interests look out after? By saving diligently? Yeah, nothing wrong with that. How do I have my interests looked out for? By having other people look out for me. And why would they look out for me? Because I want to look out for them. The primary delivery mechanism God has for you and I to receive truth, for you and I to receive grace, is through community. Now, this is a very hard message for me to give today. Actually, when I speak in the context of community. We do a full run-through here before you guys come in on Saturday night, because as we run through our entire service, we then sit in community and people critique the music, we critique me, we critique, why do we do that? To push us down? No, to make all of us better. And as we were critiquing and thinking through what this message looked like, we just realized this is a very difficult message, so I'm kind of changing it right now based on how community has sharpened me. It's an odd one, because when we talked about the core strength of Bible reading last week, I could give you all a system and a mechanism that I hope you followed through on. Every week we're having core discipline exercises that are here in your program, and I gave you one that you could actually follow through on. It was look at the Bible, find something until it's an aha, actually write it down word for word, then paraphrase it, say what does it mean, and then write down what am I going to do. There are certain core exercises, core disciplines that you must do in order to build your core. You can think about your core all you want, but unless you set time aside to build your core, you will not. That's kind of cool looking, isn't it? Yeah. Doesn't feel very good. But there are things that you could do. Now, there's all kinds of different workouts that you can do when you read the Bible. I just gave you one last week. The difficulty with community is I can't boil down community to a bullet point list. Because we're people. People are messy. People are like cats. You can't herd cats. You can't predict what relationships are going to look like. It's very difficult. So I have some things for you to think about today. I have some things I'd like you to think about applying. But please understand, this is not a linear process whereby if you do these things, everything's okay. What I want to do today is hopefully just give you something that's going to move you off center, move you off of your American rugged individualism, move you off of your, it's just Jesus and me kind of spirituality, to help you to value people who may be in your life and to take those things to a new level. So a few things. First of all, how do you do this? One thing is identify who's in your community. Identify who is in your community. Who is it in your life that's giving you truth, and who are you giving truth to? Who is it in your life that's giving you grace when you have too much to drink and you're giving them grace? Who is it that's giving you truth when you're having too much to drink too often? Who is it that's giving you truth and grace and all of, do I have an identifiable community? I've known in my life there's a micro community and a macro community. There's a macro community and a micro community. A macro community is a community you're a part of that I'll liken to your local church. It is. It's your local church. You don't know everybody there. You don't have a hand in everything, but there is something God's doing in the local, your church you're a part of, where truth and grace is coming through. I got an email that someone forwarded to me. I don't know who these people are. I just had the email forwarded to me that I'm just going to read this email. Since I sent it to a few people, I don't think they'll mind that I share this. But it's a jumping off point to talk about what is your relationship to the macro community of the local church you're a part of. Here's what it says. Why isn't the crisis in Kids Club being addressed publicly? Well, it is now, okay? Because you wrote the email. Why is it acceptable to week after week turn children away? How can we have a $20 million capital campaign, build a hospice in Africa, and still not have resources to serve the children and families of this church? This week, our kids were turned away. Parentheses, we were 15 minutes late. Is there not actual physical capacity? Is this an issue solely of volunteers? If that is the case, then why hasn't a desperate request been made from the pastor telling the congregation the church is actually turning children away from Kids Club? Desperate request. Would you please serve at Kids Club? Please. There's my desperate quest. Okay. Is this the problem the church is working to rectify, or is this seen as acceptable in a way to punish families who come late or attempt to go to the 10 or 11:45 services? Please give me some insight in the church's view on this situation. I can't imagine it's so acceptable and the problem is so impossible that it's expected to remain the same. However, if that is the situation, our family will move to another church. If you could provide suggestions as to other churches similar to Crossroads message that could possibly accommodate us, please help us identify. Okay, here you go. Here's some macro communities for you to consider. Ones that I think very highly of right here. Christ Emmanuel over in East Walnut Hills. Michael Danley, good buddy of mine. Good Shepherd Lutheran. Larry Donner, more traditional church up in Kenwood. A total stud. Awesome. Hyde Park United Methodist Church. Different, but good dudes over there. Journey Community Church down in Northern Kentucky with Mike Osborne. King's Crossing Community Church, a brand new church up in King's Mills area. Paul Taylor's a friend of mine, started a church. Vineyard, virtually any Vineyard. There's four different locations or five different locations. They're phenomenal places, and I know those pastors personally. New Life Temple, Ralph Godfrey, total African-American stud over in Madisonville. Great friend of mine. I mean that, you know, figuratively. Now, honestly, these are macro communities. These are macro communities. None of them better or worse than any other, including Crossroads. And what I find interesting about emails like that is, you see the idea of consuming. I need to come to this community and consume. I need to just consume. And if something isn't the way I want it to be, then something is wrong. Well, maybe it's because you're to be the answer to it. So when you come into a macro community called Crossroads, and we talk about announcements like we do up here, and it's not because we want to fill time. It's because we are a community. We want to let all of us know what's happening. Wherever you're going to be in a local church, you have to be committed to a local church. You've got to be committed to a local church. And there's also a micro community. These are consist of people who are within the local church you go to part of, or even a part of people who don't go to that local church or don't go to church at all. Do you know, can you identify who your macro community is? And can you identify the people who are in your micro community? The people who you call when food is rotting in your freezer. The people who you call when the tax collector or the bill collector is coming and you don't want to declare bankruptcy and you want to ask them what they think. The people who come and visit you and they find out that you're wiped out in the hospital. Who are those people? Identify. And one of the things you'll find, I think, is when Jesus identified his 12, because he had a micro community of 12. And he actually had a few more too. But he in this micro community, I believe that he chose his micro community in large part based on who he wanted to be around. Micro communities should be fun. You should be in community with people who you have fun with. Community is not all pain and arduous to-do lists. Community can be a time of fun.
Hey, good tune, man.
I don't think so.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah. This song sucks.
Talk about lame.
Totally. You can change it if you want.
I don't care. It's up to you.
I can live with it if you can.
Suit yourself.
Man, I'm sorry, I haven't done Tommy Boy for a long time. And those two are definitely not on a spiritual journey together, no question about that. But they are having fun together. Hey, I want to be in community with people who give me grace, who people give me truth, and I got to like being around them. Nothing wrong with that. Be around people who have fun. Another thing I found in community is we have to set time aside. We have to set time aside. I have a number of micro communities I'm a part of. Obviously, my family is a micro community. Staff that I'm on staff with is a micro community. I get together with a bunch of guys every Monday morning. That's a micro community. I get together with three other people every other Tuesday morning. That's a micro community. I also am part of our board of spiritual directors here at Crossroads. That's a micro community. And at our most recent board meeting, one of the board members shared something that was an interesting thing that helped me receive grace and truth in a different way. Because what happens is when we're in community with people, we hear things in people's story that we wouldn't normally know. And when we hear their story, we find out something about the world and something about God that we wouldn't have known if we were just staying by ourselves. So just to remind me of this, I took a picture of her. Her name is Usha Sklana. Here she is. And my camera isn't all that great, but Usha is a first-generation Sri Lankan. And Usha talked in the midst of this meeting about how she had been in a funk for the last few months and trying to figure out why. And then finally she said she realized it's because of an incident that happened a bit ago where she realized that she's judged according to her race. And I can't go into the details of what happened, but she realized that I sort of had this naivety that no one saw me for my nationality, and this thing realized that there are more racist people in this world than she realizes, and she was getting judged in a very painful way as a result of that. As I sat there and I listened to her, not only did my heart go out to her and did I and others try to give her grace, but I learned what it's like to be an outcast as Jesus was an outcast. I learned how the world can sometimes be a cruel place. And as I learned more about Usha, I learned more about God, I learned more about our culture, and it happened because we set time aside. We set time aside to meet regularly, and when we met, it wasn't just church business. We spend probably half of our time when we get together as a board talking about what is going on in your life. We want to be a community together, not a business decision-making board. Do you have people that you set time aside with? You know, one of the things that parents say that is a complete misnomer is that parents want to have quality time with their kids. Want to have quality time. Oftentimes people who tout quality time with kids are saying that in defense of why they're not having a quantity of time. So say, I don't have a lot of time with my kids, but I have quality time. One thing I've learned in the community of my family, the same thing I've learned in the community, every community I've been in, and that is we don't have quality without quantity. Because you don't just sit down and say, okay, here I am, got 5 minutes, let's make a count. What happens is there's a long time, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, boom, something blossoms. You say, I was not expecting that. Let's dive into that right now. And there's this quality discussion that happens in the midst of a quantity of time. This is why my favorite passage that speaks to community is Hebrews chapter 10, verse 22 and following. Here's what it says. Let us draw near to God, us. Not let me in my own personal relationship with God, not like me in my own personal journey, let us as a community, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts, our, not just my, but our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience, and having our bodies, our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us, look at all these us words, and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Let us not give up the meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another. Some of us are in the habit of meeting together. Some of us are in the habit of giving up meeting together. Let's take macro church attendance as an example. I don't think anywhere it says in the Bible, thou shalt go to churcheth every Saturday at 5:30 or else God will smiteth you. I don't think it says that anywhere in the Bible. But the way many of us behave is, if no other option comes up, then I'll go to a place where I'm challenged. So if there's no family picnic, and if the Bengals are having a bad year, and if I don't have anything else, and if there's no kids soccer games, and if there's if after all these things happen, I got nothing else to do, hey, I'll go to a place where I can be challenged in a way that MTV won't challenge me. No, it's not the way it works. If that's the case, then you are giving up the habit of meeting together. And I'm telling you, if you're giving up the habit of meeting together, you're not getting grace and you're not getting truth the way you could. On a macro level, on a micro level, I really don't want to get together with some guys on Monday mornings at 6:30 or 7. I really don't. I'd prefer not to. I'm emotionally wiped out after the weekend. There's a bunch of other things I could do. And there's a lot of times when I get together in that micro community that it actually sucks. That actually gets done at the end of an hour and a half, and I go, I don't know why I did that. That was 90 minutes. I mean, we caught up and some stuff. I can't say I feel any spiritual value at all having gone that. There's a lot of times when I come out of another community micro meeting, and I'm thinking, I don't know if this is work. And then what do you know? Next meeting, one more meeting, all of a sudden there's a blossoming of something that was lying dormant under the soil, and all of a sudden it came forward. All of a sudden, there's a person that's in the midst of a massive, massive crisis that if we weren't doing the quantity of time, there wouldn't be the quality. Set the time aside. Make it sacred. If it's Saturday at 5:30, if it's Monday at 7 a.m., if it's Thursday at 8 p.m., with whatever community, set it aside. Another thing I've learned about community is disclose. Disclose. In one community I'm a part of not too long ago, the scriptures talks about that every once in a while someone needs to be called out publicly to the carpet. And this happened a while ago. And when we called somebody out publicly to the carpet, what the Bible calls rebuking, as we did that, it caused quite a bit of stirring amongst that micro community of wondering why this would happen, what would happen if I was to disclose or someone was to find out about all the nasties of my life? And here's what I know. I know that there should be nothing in my life that somebody else doesn't know. Let me say that again. There should be nothing in my life that somebody else doesn't know. You're going, you mean your like sex life with your wife? Yes. Nothing. There should be nothing. What, you mean like your finances? Like, yes, nothing. You mean how you like messed up and did this thing? Yeah, right. There should be nothing in my life that someone doesn't know. It doesn't mean that everybody should know everything in my life, but when we have hidden things in our life is not meant to be as isolated people. Those hidden things become germs, and germs become mold, and mold, when it's put in the dark where there's no sunlight, it grows, and it becomes toxic, and it will wipe you out, and it'll come to a place where you can't even inhabit yourself because you become so toxic, and no one else can get around you either because you become so toxic. This is why I want to shed the light of people into my life, whether it's things I'm thinking that are nasty or whether it's things that I'm excited about. I have dreams. I have things that I think God is going to use me for that I've let a few people know. And I always feel awkward when I do because I can really sound like a jerk based on my dreams. It could even be things like the way I reacted to a parent-teacher conference recently. Went through a parent-teacher thing, and I'm realizing, oh, man, what are my options for my kids? It's either they play no sports or they stay up to 11 or 12 o'clock every night studying, or they get straight C's, so I process it through with people I know. I said, well, how are you dealing with the pressure of kids and education? Because I don't know about you, that was not my life when I was a kid. I was like 15 minutes a week, maybe. Of course, I had a 2.2 as well, but I want to process that. I want to disclose. See, when we're in community, intentional micro community, we're getting and we're giving what the normal course of the world won't get and give. We're getting and giving. Another photo I thought about, another last one I'll share with you today, was one I shared a while ago. It was on my bike trip I was on several weeks ago, where a deer jumped out in front of me. Bad for him. 75 miles an hour, ripped him in half. And here I was, about 10 minutes after, with my coat on, which has a bunch of deer matter on it. And one person in the micro community right here, Kevin, is taking my pulse. Now, I don't have a set time with Kevin where we get together every week or every other week, but we get together with families regularly, and we actually set aside time to do a bike trip together. And I remember as this was happening, my pulse was racing, and they said, you want to go to the hospital? And I'm thinking, I'm standing, I can think, I don't think I need to go to the hospital. And finally, I realized that I'm in no condition to make decisions. And so I turned to Kevin and said, I can't make any decisions right now. No decisions. You need to make every decision for me for the next period of time, because I'm just not qualified to make decisions right now. And he said, okay, you need to go to the hospital. I said, right, I'll go to the hospital. Got to the hospital, and he told all the other friends there, said, nobody calls their wife or their friend, nobody. Communication lockdown. So somebody calls, and then word starts to spread. We have rumor mill that's going everywhere, all this stuff. So in submitting and telling him no decisions, I was getting truth, and I was getting grace. I received grace from that. Hey, have you ever come to a point in your life where you said to somebody, you make this decision for me? We think, well, that's a weak person. You can't make a decision for yourself. No, it's a strong person. And if you are not in a place where you can have somebody in a time of crisis make a decision for you, write a check for you, offer a word of encouragement for you, run an errand for you, there's a power of community that you're missing, and there's a lack of spiritual depth that you're missing as well.